This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
It's the first Friday of the month. You know what that means, right? J-O-B-S is what that means. Also, a report from the breakfast table in Union City, Pennsylvania. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday, the fifth day of May. Good as always to have you here, everybody. So much to talk about, so little time. Jobs, of course, the Federal Reserve, health care, naturally, and taxes. We are going to dig right in. Rachel Abrams is with the New York Times. Cardiff Garcia is at the blog FT Alphaville. They are both in our studios in New York City. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey.
Cardiff, let me start with you and the jobs report. 211,000 new jobs in the economy last month. Unemployment rate is at 4.4%. We're going to have Mitchell Hartman in about 3.5 minutes talking about wages. What stuck out to you in this jobs report?
It was a good report almost across the board, and it comes as something of a relief. I mean, if you look at the economic indicators from the last couple of months on economic growth, unemployment, and on inflation, it seemed like maybe the economy had hit a bit of a soft patch and people weren't sure if that was the case or if this was just a bit of statistical fluctuation of the kind that you can expect from time to time. And it looks like this jobs report provides evidence that actually the economy continues galloping along, or if not galloping, then at least casually trotting along. And so it comes as a bit of a relief, I think.
Perhaps it's cantering. I don't even know. So Rachel, Janet Yellen, about whom I'm about to ask you both in a minute. She often says that economic expansions, she's never seen one run out of steam because of old age. That said, this economy has been going for a long time now, adding jobs for like 80 consecutive months. It is long in the tooth, no?
It is, but then again, it's not super clear when is the perfect time, right? So yeah. Even though unemployment is low, there's still questions about participation in the labor force mm-hmm. and interest rates. And so looking at unemployment in and of itself, sure, those might be encouraging figures because obviously the Fed is looking for the economy to be healthy in terms of when they want to raise rates. So that's one good sign, but it's not the only sign, and it's certainly not totally clear cut when this is going to happen.
All right. So you actually are new to our little Friday chat. So I'm going to throw something at you that Cardiff knows probably what's coming. Yeah, no, here it goes. It's all right. And it's only going to be live on the radio. So don't worry about it. Little game we play every now and then called What is Janet Yellen Thinking in 5 words or Less? The Fed, of course, met this week on interest rates. They said they're not going to raise now, that weakness in the first quarter was transitory. So in 5 words or less, what is Janet Yellen thinking?
She's thinking interest rates. I don't know what she's thinking. Maybe Cardiff has a better answer.
No, Cardiff, go ahead.
If I can do like a, what do you call it, a contraction or whatever when you combine two words, I think she'd say, I'll stay slow and steady, something
I'll
like that.
Slow and steady. All right, I'll give you that.
Inflation. Can I
move?
You could just say inflation 5 times, and that would be a winner because there is none. All right, let me change gears here, Cardiff, for a second, and get to not the healthcare debate so much, but what happened after the healthcare vote this week. Republicans went to the White House. President Trump had a celebratory event in the Rose Garden. He said, yes, we passed healthcare onward and upward. And then he said,
Now we're going to turn to tax reform. I wonder what the feeling is about how hard tax reform is going to be, given how hard health care was, if that makes any sense.
Very hard. And we got some inkling of that earlier this year when they wanted to pass something called the border adjusted tax, which Marketplace covered quite a bit. That ended up falling by the wayside because what ends up happening with any kind of tax reform is that some people will be helped and some people will be hurt. But the people who will be hurt are going to make a lot more noise about it than the people who will be helped, because that's often a very diffuse crowd. And so negotiating that kind of thing, navigating it through Congress, is always really tough, especially if it's going to be a big package like the one that the Republicans have been discussing in recent weeks.
Do you think there's a chance, Rachel, quickly before we run out of time here, that this gets done by the end of the year, as has been promised by the White House?
I think it seems really difficult. Tax reform is tax overhaul. Tax reform is so complicated. It's not there's not one cohesive industry that's all in agreement. I think it's really tough.
Right. Rachel Abrams at The New York Times taking the quiz live on the air. I'm sorry I stayed. Cardiff Garcia at the blog FD Alphaville. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
All right. Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, gold was down. Oil was down. Stocks were up. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so a little bit more about that jobs report. The overall really good jobs report, as Cardiff was saying, but about which there are a couple of nits to pick. The biggest, as it has been for a while, is wages, as I said. When the unemployment rate falls, like it has been, wages, the theory goes, are supposed to go up. Supply, demand, all of that. It's an old economic concept known as the Phillips curve, except right now, wages aren't going up. Not very much anyway, just 0.3% in this jobs report today, 2.5% year over year, which is barely ahead of inflation. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman looked into what gives with that.
The really low unemployment and tight labor market we have now should be boosting pay and living standards more, says Bernie Baumol at the Economic Outlook Group.
It's really quite amazing. We have a 2.5% growth in wages now, precisely the same growth that we saw in 2009 when the jobless rate stood at 10%.
In theory, employers should have to compete harder to hire workers and offer higher pay to get them. But Vincent Reinhardt at Standish Mellon Asset Management says the job market's out of whack, partly because worker productivity is barely improving.
If we're not getting productivity, i.e. increases in output per hour, then there's just less of a larger pie to pass along to workers.
Economist Kathy Barrera at jobsite ZipRecruiter thinks employers might be holding back on wages because of political uncertainty.
The labor laws, tax laws, health care right now is a little bit up in the air, and all of those impact employers' bottom line.
And Bernie Baumol says our orthodox economic models, like the Phillips curve that says low unemployment drives wages up, may be out of date.
Now, with the U.S. much more integrated into the global economy, companies can outsource, find labor anywhere they want around the world.
Bottom line, if paychecks don't grow faster and prices keep rising, consumers could end up with less disposable income to keep the economic expansion going. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
These are not the best of times for local television stations. An ever-increasing number of us are watching our TV on streaming services, Hulu and Netflix, to name just a couple. Fewer of us are turning into local news as well. Still, though, there appears to be a bidding war in the offing for the 40-plus stations that make up Tribune Media. Both Sinclair Broadcasting and 21st Century Fox, in partnership with a private equity firm, Blackstone Group, are said to be interested. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has that one.
Local television is in consolidation mode.
The broadcast television model is in trouble.
Alan Alboron is a professor at the University of North Texas. He thinks the best way to survive that trouble might be to grow.
To remain competitive and to lower their costs.
Consolidation, putting more stations under one roof, can make for some good old Econ 101 economies of scale. Brian Weiser is an analyst at Pivotal Research.
There's just lots of opportunity to share resources that just make for an overall more profitable enterprise.
More local stations can also give owners a better bargaining position with advertisers, cable companies, and with the national broadcast networks that sell content to those local affiliates. That's where Fox's reported interest in Tribune Media can look a whole lot more like defense than offense. Sinclair already has more than 50 Fox affiliates. Tribune Media would add another dozen plus to its roster.
Fox is probably most scared about having to deal with bargaining power from the possibility that Sinclair would be a major owner of their affiliates.
Adam Renoff is an economics professor at Middle Tennessee State University. He thinks any fight over Tribune Media is just an opening salvo in a rush to consolidation. Yes, to survive or at least be more competitive, but also encouraged along by the FCC, which just a few weeks ago relaxed regulations on how many stations an owner can have. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Currency traders made their bet on the French presidential election today. The euro gained against the dollar, a sign that markets think the pro-European Union candidate Emmanuel Macron is going to prevail on Sunday against the far-right, anti-EU, and anti-immigration Marine Le Pen. Macron's ahead in the polls by as much as 20 points, and if that holds, it could be a roadblock for the economic populist bandwagon that started rolling last year with Brexit and then continued with President Trump. From the European desk, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
"We are going to win," chant Macron supporters. And says one of them, Serge Dupont, it'll be a victory for moderation and optimism. "If Macron wins, it'll be good for our children and our grandchildren," he says. "It's about youth and hope, everything positive." And Candice Benjamin says she's voting for Macron because France has tried governments of the right and the left and they've both failed.
"So now I think it's time to try something else, try something new.
A middle way.
A middle way, maybe.
Macron has pulled off an amazing feat, persuading his supporters that he's something new, an outsider. But he was the socialist government's economy minister until a year ago. And as a product of the country's top schools, he is a member of the now hated French elite. But, says Douglas Yates of the American University in Paris, Macron can at least claim to be self-made.
"He made his own way from modest provincial backgrounds by passing competitive examinations, getting into the best schools, and working his way up. He is part of the elite, but he's part of the meritocratic elite."
At his rallies, Macron has pumped out a youthful, upbeat message. While Marine Le Pen rails pessimistically against global capitalism, Macron, a former investment banker, joyfully promotes the benefits of business. Music to the ears of entrepreneur Karim Amelal.
"He is in favor of free market, of deregulation, in favor of globalization and so on. So, of course, this is the pro-capital or the pro-entrepreneurs and the pro-business candidate."
With youth unemployment at 25% and resentment towards bankers still festering, Macron's success is remarkable. But the main reason for it, says Nathalie Nouguéret, former editor of the newspaper Le Monde, is not who he is, but who he is not. He's clearly not Marine Le Pen.
"Although there's so much disgruntlement, so many anxieties over globalization, over so many issues, still I think a majority of French people consider that Le Pen is a danger to democracy and they don't want to see her get into the Élysée Palace."
The European Union doesn't want to see that either. Le Pen would like to pull France out of the euro and possibly out of the EU as well. That would spell the end of the bloc. But if the Europhile Macron wins on Sunday, Douglas Yates believes it could revitalize the union, battered by the crises over debt, migration and Brexit.
"He and perhaps a social democrat in Germany could create a new Franco-German axis that could give a new wind to the European project."
So Europhile is he that Macron has described Brexit as a crime and has warned the Brits that he would insist on a very tough exit deal. Simon Cooper of the Financial Times believes Prime Minister Theresa May would not cheer a Macron presidency.
"Because Macron believes in Europe, he's going to say Britain has to pay a price for Brexit. So this is not good news for Theresa May."
So Britain loses if Macron is voted into office on Sunday and the EU wins. How the people of France will fare isn't yet clear. At the European Desk, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I'm still giving him a chance.
The big promise as it stood on day 98. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 55 points this Friday, about 0.25%, 21,006. The NASDAQ up 25 points, 0.4%, 6,100 on the nose. S&P 500 up 9 points, 0.4%, 23,099. For the week, the 5 days gone by, the Dow up 66 points, 0.3%. The NASDAQ up 53 points, that is 0.8%. The S&P 500 tacked on 15 points, about 0.6% there as well. We talked about the bidding war, the probable bidding war, that is, for Tribune Media's local television stations. Tribune up 1.7%. Sinclair Broadcasting up about 0.5% today. Competing bidder 21st Century Fox about 0.3% to the good. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.35%. And you are listening to Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm Molly Wood.
We host a podcast called Make Me Smart.
And we want to know what you want to know
about business, technology, and culture.
Write to us at makemesmart@marketplace.org.
And check us out wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Erie County, Pennsylvania is a place of particular interest for us this year. A county that in the last three presidential elections has gone Obama, Trump. We're calling this slice of our coverage The Big Promise, how the promises candidate Trump made are playing out among the people who voted for President Trump. I was in Erie County the day before our inauguration day, Union City, Pennsylvania specifically, population 3,300, once a booming manufacturing town, the chair capital of the world, it called itself. Lots of big-name manufacturers there that are now gone. I had breakfast that day at Madonna's Family Restaurant on Route 8, just past the center of town, with a bunch of regulars who've been at the same table at the same time every day for a good long while, just talking politics oftentimes.
The election was revolt.
Absolutely.
Absolute revolt.
I went back to Madonna's last week, Thursday. It was day 98 of the Trump presidency.
There they are.
To see how they were feeling.
I'm Norm Troyer. I'm the local realtor.
I'm Gerald Eddy. I'm retired. I live half the year in Florida.
I'm Keith Troyer. I'm a local contractor.
I'm Merv Troyer. I'm a retired dairy farmer, and now I'm a local contractor.
Robert Glenn, funeral director.
Bob Glenn doesn't always agree with the rest of his table, so I started with him about how he's feeling about President Trump.
I'm still giving him a chance. I listened to one of his people this morning on the news, and he's going to give the big tax break.
Yeah.
But he's still not going to show his own tax forms. For a person that hasn't paid 18 years in taxes, I'm a little worried about him there.
Well, we don't know what he's paid and what he hasn't paid.
Well, that's true, but for 18 years he stated he hadn't paid any taxes. The fact that he's bankrupt companies and taken income out of families and companies, I'm just not so sure about him.
Keith Troyer, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
And it comes from a poll that we did when we asked people how they were feeling about government in Washington. And three-quarters of the people that we talked to said they think that Washington has forgotten about people like them. As you sit here in Erie, Pennsylvania today, what do you think? Union City, Pennsylvania.
Well, when the president talked about draining the swamp, you know, that made a lot of sense. Because you have Republicans and Democrats that are mired in money.
But are they paying attention to what you guys around this table want?
Oh, absolutely not. I've never had any of the candidates really talk to me. Trump was the first one to ever kind of really connect. I voted for Trump mainly because of the Supreme Court justice, and now we have him. That was my main focus. I said, if we can get Trump in there, we have a chance to go outside of the swamp.
So as you look at some of the other issues that are getting worked on in Washington now, tax cuts, health care, immigration,
Are those a factor for you? Do you like what he's doing?
Well, I think you're going to need more time to see all this come to fruition. You know, obviously, we've seen a lot of executive orders come to fruition, and a lot of jobs are going to come back, but it's going to take time.
Are any of you five at this table being directly affected by what's happening in Washington? I mean, you're all of an age. You're financially secure. Why'd you vote the way you voted?
Yeah, it affects me and what happens in Washington. I'm sort of with Keith there, especially on the Supreme Court appointments, because I have grandchildren and I'd kind of like to see them have a good life. That's kind of the way I'm looking at things right now.
What are you looking for out of the rest of his term? Or two terms? I mean, you know, 100 days is nothing in the span of a presidency.
I think he's going to do what he said he's going to do, and the man is a workaholic. I think he has our country in his best interests, and I think he's going to do the job.
I'll let you finish your mouthful of toast, then I'm going to ask you a question. You all done? All right. I had Caitlin, our producer, give you a call about 6 weeks or so ago. Mm-hmm. To check in on how you were feeling and whether you were following the buzz around Donald Trump. And you said, as she related it to me, hey, you know, I watch the news every now and then. Seems okay to me. How closely are you paying attention to all the things that are happening?
Not so much in Washington as I am globally. I will give Trump credit for what he's done, but the real tale of a president is going to come the next 4 years after he's elected, because that's when a lot of the policies traditionally in the past has come to fruition, or they're going to start tearing them apart. And I am disappointed in Congress an awful lot, because I think they're following party guidelines and they aren't doing the will of the people, the ones that elected them. They seem to have turned their back on them, forgot them. They had a public forum here about a month ago, 2 months ago, and two of the congressmen never bothered to show up. They want to take their questions over the phone rather than face the public. That disappointed me, and it showed the fact that they don't care about the general public that much. They care about their own image and want to pat themselves on the back, so to speak. They just don't care what the people think.
Yeah. Keith Troyer.
Yes.
The news last couple of days about NAFTA and how the president now is angry with the Canadians over their practices, and he was going to pull out of NAFTA, but then he wasn't. What do you think of how he's acting on his trade promises, right? Because as we've acknowledged around this table this morning, he's doing what he said he was going to do.
Right.
How do you feel about him and America and the global economy?
As a conservative, I don't think that's a very good trade policy. And so we'll see what in the future what happens, but I think probably Trump's going to probably back away from NAFTA a little bit.
Is that going to be all right with you if he pulls up the trade drawbridges with not only just NAFTA, but China? And I mean, he's talking about lots of stuff.
Well, we'll see what happens here in the future. I think he has our best interest at heart on trade.
All right, so wait, so you guys, clearly you're brothers, so you think the same. Think along as cousins, all right. But that phrase has been said a couple of times around the table this morning. He's got our best interests at heart.
I think so, yeah.
How do you know? Or you just base it on what he said?
Well, he said so many things that, you know, we aren't sure of. But that's the kind of guy he is. And so we're all letting this play out a little bit. But at the same time, he says enough things that make me think that he's serious about being a blue-collar billionaire, if you want to call it that. And he has a lot of good people around him, and they're all wealthy, but they're all people who don't need the money. They're doing this for our interest, I believe, as well as theirs. But, I mean, they're not in it for the money.
When he says stuff like, I'm going to grow the economy at 5%, do you buy that?
If all these things come through, I believe that it will.
The growth of the economy, any percent, I think he's going to be successful there. because we've had a drain on the economy for years. Companies are leaving the country, going overseas, investing overseas. So if he can grow the economy, I think it'll be successful. I don't care if it's 1 or 2%, but he's been successful there.
One of the things he hasn't been doing, actually, so much since he got elected, I mean, between Election Day and Inauguration Day, there was a whole lot of talk of, I'm going to stop companies from leaving, I'm going to keep jobs in this company. He went and he did the Carrier thing and the Ford thing and all that. He hasn't done so much of that since he's been elected. Wonder why you think that is.
Because I think he's been hit with a lot of other problems that he's had to sit back and solve. And I think he's finding out the job's a little bigger than what he thought it was going to be. I think he's finding out that chair in the Oval Office is a little bigger than what he actually thought it was going to be.
Our coverage of Erie County this first year of the Trump administration is called The Big Promise. You can catch up with all of it at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which what looks like progress actually isn't. You know that comfort that comes from a good cup of coffee and a bagel? Well, I think Einstein Brothers Bagels missed the memo. They're coming out with a caffeinated bagel. Espresso Buzz Bagel is the branding, except really it's not all that buzzy. Just about a third as much caffeine as in a regular cup of coffee. Me, myself, I'll take the coffee, sesame bagel, some lox, a little cream cheese. Perfect. Red onion, too. Maybe some capers. It's really good. Dow up 55 today. The NASDAQ up 25. S&P 500 up 9 points. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Cesar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you on Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.